Monster Man, Episode 386, Dragon Turtle and Dragon Ant. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we have emerged from the Dragons section of Monsters Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Or have we? Because we're going to be looking at some monsters today that look a good deal like dragons. Now, most of these are monsters we have seen before, and for the most part, they are pretty close to what we've seen before, so I'm going to get through them pretty quickly. I've got four monsters in today's episode. Before doing that, though, it's time to thank some Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And depending on the level you pledge at, you'll get some rewards. At the $1 level, you get occasional bonus content, a special episode that I make every month to kind of fill my listeners in on what I'm up to, as well as my heartfelt thanks. At the $2 level, you'll get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the Deities and Demigods supplement for AD&D and how to use it and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy RPGs. And at the $5 level, you'll get the chance to select a topic for a special episode, like the one coming up later this week. So thank you very much to new patron John Hartwell, and welcome back to returning patron Lori Kudstall. If Lori, I'm sure that's not how you pronounce your last name, and I apologize. Your support means a lot to me. It's really gratifying to know that you're enjoying the show enough to want to support it. All right, let's take a look at some monsters. First up, we have the Dragon Turtle. Now, this is an old friend from the Monster Manual itself, and it has a great Tony DiTurlizzi illustration that really emphasizes the expression on a turtle's face. It's got that kind of sleepily amused or slightly curious kind of expression. This friendly face is attached to an extremely dangerous creature. It's hungry, it's selfish, it's described as treacherous, and much of this entry is devoted to explaining how it can capsize ships by coming up underneath them with its huge shell. Despite the fact that dragon turtles are very large and very powerful, I sort of wish they would be larger. The diameter of the shell is 30 feet, which is absolutely colossal by turtle standards, but somehow I imagined that they were bigger. Dragon turtles are pretty cool. We did them, you know, way back in season one. My understanding is that they are indeed a creature from kind of Chinese folklore and art, although I don't know how accurate the D&D dragon turtle is to that. And in fact, I speculated that Bowser is a dragon turtle. I feel like this is maybe the most commonly used big aquatic monster, like probably more aquatic campaigns or like piratey sections of otherwise landlubberly campaigns have like Kuotoas or Sahuagins. But I think in terms of the big guys, the dragon turtle is probably the star, probably the most popular of D&D's big aqua monsters. If there's another one, I can't think of it. Next, we have a category of monsters. We've got the dragonettes. And dragonettes are small animals that resemble dragons physically in terms of being, you know, sometimes winged, sometimes fire-breathing lizards. But they are not true dragons. And all of these are pretty small. Like, the biggest is the fire drake, which is kind of like the size of a dog. First up, we have the fairy dragon. The fairy dragon's entry is very close to its Monster Manual 2 entry, including quite a lot of the exact same language, so I guess this was not seen as something that needed to be updated. The fairy dragon is a mischievous prankster whose breath weapon is a gas that produces euphoria and leaves people kind of staggering around in a state of bliss. It says that although generally their pranks are spontaneous, sometimes they will spend a long time preparing a particular practical joke. They have a giggle, which is like the tinkling of silver bells, which I gotta tell you, the more precious the authors think these little critters are, the less I like them. Although I do sympathize with some of their desires. For example, they will go to great lengths to get a fresh apple pie. And who doesn't like a fresh apple pie? They're delicious. You know my feelings about both the proliferation of dragons and mischievous little woodland sprite creatures. The fairy dragon is probably a bit more cutesy poo, frankly, in its aesthetics than I would want for most games that I'm going to run. I think if you were sending your adventurers into a part of your campaign world that was distinguished by its kind of whimsical fairy tale quality, then a fairy dragon would be a pretty fun thing to include. Following that, we have the fire drake. The fire drake is an example of a, it's like, it's a bit like a small dragon, but it doesn't fly and it isn't the kind of intelligent creature that a dragon is. It is merely a fire-breathing lizard. So it kind of physically resembles a dragon, a very small one. You might mistake one for a baby dragon. You probably shouldn't be out there murdering baby dragons, but what do I know? I'm lawful good. This monster provides an interesting example of a logical consequence of the original description being added to the updated entry. So in the Fiend Folio, we learn that Fire Drake blood is highly flammable. And indeed, when they breathe fire, they're just aspirating that flammable blood, and then it's catching light on contact with the air. Don't ask me how that works. And characters could, like, save the Fire Drake blood and use it to anoint their weapons, turning them into flaming swords and what have you. Here, there's an added complication, which is not present in the Fiend Folio version, which is that if you cut a Fire Drake with an edged weapon, there's a possibility that you're going to get burning blood all over you, which would be bad. So it's a bit like Alien in that respect, right? The idea that, you know, when they bleed, they hurt you. So even if you hurt them, it's not a good idea to be up close to them. The illustration is, I'm of mixed mind about this illustration, because on the one hand, I will say that this illustration is probably a better representation of the Fire Drake than the illustration of the Fiend Folio, right? If the Fire Drake is merely a lizard, merely an animal, and it just, like, looks a bit like a dragon, and it wanders around lighting things on fire, then this illustration is better. But if I were to not tell you anything about the Fire Drake and just show you the two images side by side and ask you which was better, you would pick the one in the Fiend Folio, because it shows this kind of charming, chubby little lizard, you know, little baby dragon thing as the Fire Drake. So this illustration is maybe more accurate to the description, but it's not a patch on the Russ Nicholson artwork from Fiend Folio. And finally, we have the pseudo-dragon. You know, pseudo-dragons, they are playful, benevolent, dragon-like pets. They're not chaotic good like the fairy dragons. I think they're neutral. They just kind of hang out, and whoever is their owner... I was going to say they have an owner because the pseudo-dragon has, like, a pet-like relationship with humans. But on the other hand, maybe they don't have owners because the pseudo-dragon's personality is very kind of, like, haughty and demanding and arrogant. But I don't think that's meant to sound unpleasant so much as it's just meant to make them sound like cats. So pseudo-dragons are very kind of, like, selfish and entitled. They want to be the center of attention. They want to know what you're thinking about them at all times, you know, and they feel like if you don't do that, then you have your priorities out of whack. Which sounds like it was written by a cat owner. Where does the thing of wizards having little kitty cat dragons come from? Because it's in a lot of D&D art, but I don't know whether the artists were out there, your Larry Zelmore and your Jeff Easley were like painting wizards with little kitty cat dragons, and then someone went, oh, you know what, we should put those in the game. Or whether, because there was a pseudo-dragon in the game, those artists just decided to represent that. I feel like a lot of wizards give off the kind of stacks of papers in the study kind of vibe that suits the owner of a fat and selfish cat. So it's not completely out of the question that people would just, you know, illustrate something like that and then someone would go, oh, that's a good idea. I wonder if the personality of the pseudo-dragon is intended to be a downside, which I think is actually a common mistake that designers make, which is to give the creature a drawback, which is that you kind of constantly have to roleplay with it. And the reason that this is not a drawback is that essentially what you're saying is, as the penalty for this, I'm going to give you screen time and, like, lots of roleplay with NPCs, which are not punishments, they're things that people want. Okay, this week's going to be a busy one. Patreon subscribers, you'll be getting the bonus episode later on this week. We've also got a special episode coming up in the middle of the week, not about any specific monster, but about implementing certain types of monster. And then, at the end of the week, we finally leave dragons behind altogether, and instead, we're going to talk about dragons, which are completely different. As an aside, if the sound quality of this episode sounds a little different, like in terms of the recording, it should be okay, but if the acoustics are a little different, again, I'm recording in a different part of the house, and that would be why. Please bear with me. Normal service will be restored shortly. Until then, I hope that you'll join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.